This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump sounding a different horn. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, May 9th. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump could be changing gears on a couple of topics, taxes and the minimum wage.
North Carolina officials face a deadline today to respond to a federal government challenge to its law regarding the use of bathrooms by transgender people.
The Wall Street Journal says Twitter has cut off U.S. intelligence agencies from access to a service that sifts through all of its social media postings.
And thanks to social media postings, every baby has a shot at being a model.
Brands are thrilled with this. They are faced with this, you know, ever-growing need for more pictures to fill their own social media sites and their e-commerce sites, and so they're constantly on the hunt for this new content.
Wall Street Journal reporter Elizabeth Holmes on social media baby pictures being embraced by marketers. She's here in about 20 minutes. Presumptive GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump seems to be moving positions ahead of the general election. The New York businessman suggested that his tax plan, which includes a break for the country's top wage earners, would likely be different if he becomes president, considering it would likely need support from Democrats on Capitol Hill.
In my opinion, the taxes for the rich will go up somewhat.
Mr. Trump also said he wants to lower taxes on U.S. businesses, which he suggested are among the highest in the world. In addition, he continues to suggest he's open to increasing the minimum wage, after saying earlier in the presidential primary race that legislation on that topic would slow the economy. Mr. Trump also maintains the Republican Party does not have to be unified heading into the fall because he will gain the Democratic votes needed to win. Today is the deadline for North Carolina officials to respond to the U.S. government's challenge to a controversial law involving LGBT people. Federal civil rights attorneys have focused especially on provisions requiring transgender people to use public restrooms that correspond to the gender indicated on their birth certificate. Natasha Ostrom is a minister in Raleigh who wants the law repealed.
A very dangerous law that's hurting a lot of people, and not just hurting transgender folks either. It's hurting everybody. This is a law that attacks multiple communities all at once.
If the state does not pull back from implementing the statute, it could face a federal lawsuit, according to three letters that the U.S. Justice Department sent last week to North Carolina officials. Tammy Fitzgerald, meanwhile, is with the North Carolina Values Coalition.
Our hope and our admonition for the governor and the General Assembly is stand strong. The Obama administration has no right to take the position of redefining the term sex to include gender identity.
Federal officials also argue that the measure violates civil rights protections against sex discrimination on the job and in education for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. For the first time since a massive wildfire in Alberta, Canada began last week, officials have offered something optimistic. As the fire moved into week number two, light rains and cooler temperatures helped hold it back, giving officials hope they could soon begin assessing the damage to Fort McMurray, close to where the fire started. There was still no timeline, however, for getting the town's 88,000 inhabitants back to their homes if those structures are still standing. Scott Long is with the Alberta Emergency Management Agency.
Things like power stations, schools, hospitals, water treatment plants are essential for the reentry planning.
The city's gas has been turned off, its power grid is damaged, and the water there is undrinkable. Some Alberta officials said displaced people would be better off driving about 400 miles south to Calgary, where health and social services are better. Meanwhile, there are more than 500 firefighters battling this blaze in and around Fort McMurray. And up in the sky, 15 helicopters and 14 air tankers. It's 10 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here's to the innovators and job creators. Dell is proud to support small businesses everywhere with reliable, award-winning technology powered by Intel Core processors, created to give your business four times faster performance and cut downtime by 50%. During Small Business Month, enjoy 35% off select business PCs, plus always get free shipping and advice from Dell's dedicated experts. Visit Dell.com/radio to discover how we can help you do your best work. Intel Inside, powerful solution outside. Good Monday to you. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton says the FBI has not asked to interview her as part of its investigation into her use of a personal email server as Secretary of State. But Mrs. Clinton reiterated on CBS's Face the Nation yesterday that she would make herself available if asked.
No one has reached out to me yet, but last August, I made it clear I'm more than ready to talk to anybody anytime.
CNN reported last week that she was likely to be interviewed soon by the FBI. Meanwhile, Ben Geeman at National Journal says the scandal could change government. Ben set this up.
The idea of transparency and openness has really not exactly been Hillary Clinton's political strong suit during this campaign. You know, she's, of course, on track to win the Democratic nomination, and early signs are that she will be heavily favored against Donald Trump. But one of her vulnerabilities is the accusations that she practiced a sort of excessive form of secrecy by keeping her emails out of the government system, and as a result, outside of public records requests for years, actually. And then you've got a related issue, which is that she gave these very highly paid speeches to Goldman Sachs a few years ago, and for three speeches, I believe she got a total of $675,000, and she's really refused to release the transcripts of those speeches. So what I'm trying to say is she sort of has a transparency problem, and what I find interesting, aside from the politics of that, which has certainly been evident on the campaign trail, is that I think this could really affect certain types of policy disputes and lobbying if and when she becomes president that are often sort of lower profile issues in policymaking, but I think the fact that people are going to be very much on notice, and she's very much on notice for how she handles openness and transparency, I think that could lead to the issues having a somewhat higher profile.
You think that happens whether or not the Justice Department finds fault with her private email server?
I think so, because, whether or not the Justice Department charges Clinton, and it's looking like the early indications are that they will not, I don't think that there's anybody out there, including, frankly, Clinton herself, who has apologized for use of this private system, I don't think there's anybody out there who thinks that this was an open and ideal and transparent way to go about things. So even if there are not any charges brought, I think there's sort of widespread agreement that this was a real transparency problem. And as a result, I think this is something that people will be looking for if and when she becomes president, from President Clinton, as far as how she kind of handles openness. I don't want to pretend these issues are going to be as salient as some of the most high-profile political issues that are out there, but normally these things tend to be really low-profile, sometimes paid attention to by just kind of a small subset of sort of wonky journalists. And I'm saying these things could perhaps be a little bit more prominent, and it could put some wind in the sails of advocates who toil sometimes, I think, very much behind the scenes and have a hard time attracting attention for their efforts.
We're speaking with Ben Geeman, staff reporter at National Journal. His piece is called How Hillary Clinton's Email Scandal Could Change Government. Are there changes, Ben, even if she's not president?
I think so. One possibility is that both the House and the Senate have passed similar but separate pieces of legislation, bipartisan legislation, I should mention, to really improve the implementation of the Freedom of Information Act. Because basically, you have advocates on all sides, conservative activists, liberal activists, journalists who care a lot about the Freedom of Information Act. There's been a lot of outcry just about how difficult it is to pry information loose from many administrations, including the Obama administration. And so the Obama administration has said that it would sign the Senate-passed version of that legislation. So if the House can be convinced, and there's, I think, some real pressure right now on the House to just take up the Senate version despite some differences and pass that and get it to the president, if President Obama were to sign that law, it would be a Clinton administration tasked, if she takes office, it would be a Clinton administration tasked with sort of breathing life into what's required under that law. So I think there would be some attention paid to whether or not this thing can really take flight once it's actually signed into law. So I think that there likely will be some changes in the offing regardless. Another one I would look for, actually, is certainly there's been a tremendous amount of attention on the use of personal or non-governmental emails by people in the State Department, in the Defense Department, and so on. So I think that it would probably behoove President Clinton to make sure that federal agency officials use the government channels for their communications.
All right. So what about the speeches, though? I don't think anybody begrudges her, even though they might be shocked at the amount she gets paid. But it does kind of speak volumes that she refuses to release the transcripts. I mean, what could happen, though, on that front?
It does. I mean, I'm not so sure that those will ever see the light of day. But I think in some ways, the fact that they are unreleased and it provides this ongoing talking point out on the campaign trail sort of ironically keeps the issue sort of perhaps more in the public's mind, the sort of lack of existence of the transcripts. And who knows? I mean, the transcripts themselves could be quite vanilla, right? I mean, it's sort of, in fact, a little bit mysterious to me that she hasn't released them and just put this issue to bed for once and for all. But, you know, as long as she declines to do that, I think this kind of issue of transparency, which is, you know, politically pretty low profile compared to the sort of big issues in any election, like the economy and foreign policy questions, it keeps this a little bit more at the forefront. I mean, look, I don't want to pretend that things like OIRA and the Freedom of Information Act and whether Office of Legal Justice Department, Office of Legal Counsel opinion should be made public or not. I don't want to pretend those are ever going to be the big political issues of the day. But I think the way that this issue has bubbled up in the campaign at least puts a little bit of extra light on these topics.
Thanks, Ben. Ben Geeman from National Journal. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory, shows no signs of backing down in the face of the federal government's deadline today to declare he won't enforce the new state law limiting protections for LGBT people. Defiance that could risk funding for the state's university system and lead to a protracted legal battle. McCrory and other state officials have been under pressure since the Justice Department warned last week that the law passed in March violates civil rights protections. This North Carolina resident wants to see the law repealed.
You have to do something that will cause enough of an impact to force their hand and make them change it.
McCrory has not disclosed how the state will respond to the Justice Department. Donald Trump says he could see taxes actually rise for upper-income households if needed to win cuts for the middle class.
No, in my plan, they're going down, but by the time it's negotiated, they'll go up.
Trump also says he's now open to increasing the minimum wage after indicating early in the election cycle that such a move would slow the economy. Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew is highlighting the effect Puerto Rico's $70 billion debt crisis is having on the millions of people who live there and on the Republican-led Congress's struggle to come up with a solution. Lew is heading to the island territory today as part of the Obama administration's campaign to pressure Congress to act. Puerto Rico missed a nearly $370 million bond payment on May 1st. And now that it's prom season, you'll probably be hearing a lot of these kinds of stories. The father of an Ohio teen says she's on top of the world after a surprise prom date with a Cleveland Browns player. Elyria High School senior Elna Wright is nonverbal and uses a wheelchair as a result of a rare progressive disorder. Since she had no date, her parents took to social media asking if an athlete might escort their sports-crazed daughter. Cameron Irving stepped up. The 6'5", 313-pound guard picked Wright up in a limo bus, posed for photos in the historic downtown square, and accompanied her to the dance.
Very nice. Sounds like he could pick everything up. 6'5", 313.
I got to see the pictures from that. She's probably like a little thing. And
yes, I'm sure. Isn't everything little next to 6'5", 313?
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Holy smokes. Good for him. Good story. 22 minutes after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Welcome into Monday. Smartphone savvy parents are getting the attention of marketers by sharing photos online with designated hashtags or a company's social media handle. Wall Street Journal reporter Elizabeth Holmes says the makers of sippy cups, diapers, and cribs, faced with a never-ending daily need for photos to fill their own social media sites, are gladly repurposing the shots. Elizabeth, what have you found?
Well, as a new mom, I can say that, with certainty, that moms really love to take pictures of their babies. And what used to be sort of confined to a scrapbook is now filling social media feeds. And as part of that, they, moms or dads, tend to add a lot of tags to get the attention of the company, of the brand that their kid is wearing or something they're playing with or using. And brands are thrilled with this. They are faced with this, you know, ever-growing need for more pictures to fill their own social media sites and their e-commerce sites, and so they're constantly on the hunt for this new content, and moms are just giving it to them, and they're taking it, and everybody's sort of really happy about it.
Wow. So is this sort of using our kids as pawns? I don't know. Are we trying to get free stuff or something?
The millennial mom is really active on social media and feels very comfortable sharing a lot of information. And so tagging is one way to kind of share with people, you know, what kind of brands you use. And the other side of that is that you get the attention of the brands. And I think some people are hoping, you know, to get freebies or some sort of deal out of this. But a lot of people are just hoping that someone else thinks their kid is as cute as they do. And so if they share, you know, if Pottery Barn Kids shares a picture of your baby on their site and it gets, you know, thousands of likes, that's like a nice, warm, fuzzy moment for some moms.
Yeah.
No, I think it's really interesting because everybody that I talked to for this story, like, both sides were really enthusiastic. I was surprised at how, you know, willing moms were to kind of put a lot of information out there. But, you know, they say that, you know, this is social media and this is sort of the world we live in today. And so if they can, you know, have their baby be a mini celebrity for 15 minutes, why not?
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal style writer Elizabeth Holmes. Her piece is called Every Baby Can Be a Model. You listed a couple of funny comments from companies. So I guess it just sort of play along, right? Huggy saying, she sure is a beauty, right? Like,
yeah, so they need to encourage people to share these pictures, obviously. Not that moms need a ton of encouragement, but what Huggies has done on their Facebook page is they'll put a call out and say, you know, what's your baby wearing today? Or who does your baby look more like, mom or dad? And then they ask people to put pictures in their comments. And then they go through and they respond to each picture and say something really nice, like, oh, she's such a cutie. And again, like, for moms, if you know, they're looking for that kind of outside affirmation. And for brands, they want people to feel warm and fuzzy about their brand, too. You know, and so if Huggies responds, maybe you're more likely to, you know, buy Huggies diapers or that sort of thing. The moms that I think are kind of among the more impressive ones are the ones that have parlayed this into something a little bit more. I talked to one mom who reached out to her company and said, hey, I really like your stuff. Would you mind, you know, sending me a couple freebies to try? And, you know, here's my Instagram account. And she happens to be a really good photographer. I mean, she's an amateur photographer, but she takes nice pictures, and she sort of figured out that you should take a picture and not have any competing brands in the shot, and you should make sure it's really clean and sort of uncluttered. And, you know, she takes these cute pictures, and she gets free stuff. So she may not be getting paid, but she's getting something.
Wow. So is these kind of collecting these baby pictures, is that part of some of these companies' actual marketing strategy right now?
Oh, yes, absolutely. They have teams that, you know, there's all these tech services that will help you kind of round it up based on a hashtag or, you know, using a handle. And so they're not taking pictures off the internet willy-nilly. They're taking the pictures that moms want to share with them.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Wall Street Journal style writer Elizabeth Holmes. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Mailing your letters and packages has just gotten a lot easier thanks to Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can mail and ship anything, anywhere, using just your computer and printer. No more trips to the post office, and it's so easy. Anyone can do it. Just click, print, and mail. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage right from your desk. Stamps.com does all the work for you. They'll even give you a digital scale that automatically calculates exact postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail. And setup is easy, too. In minutes, you'll be printing your very own postage. You'll never have to go to the post office again. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in DEAL. That's Stamps.com and enter the code DEAL.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Glad you're with us on this Monday, May 9. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Deadline today for North Carolina officials to respond to a challenge to an LGBT law. Severe weather in the forecast for parts of Middle America. Iran has test-fired another ballistic missile. Penn State says legal settlements with Jerry Sandusky's accusers cover alleged abuse dating to 1971. All of Canada mad at Dwayne Wade for continuing to warm up during O Canada before the Raptors game Saturday. He blames clock management. A Powerball ticket in New Jersey takes all $429 million. Radiohead dropped a new album yesterday, and the latest on that home in Ohio that was egged more than 100 times. That story in about 20 minutes. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Make Michigan your number one choice for business. What now for the job market? After a lackluster report from the Labor Department, the economy added the fewest number of jobs in 7 months in April, and Americans dropped out of the labor force. Only 160,000 jobs were created last month as construction employment barely rose and the retail sector got rid of jobs. Analysis now from Pat O'Keefe, Director of Economic Research at Cone Resnick in New Jersey. Pat, your reaction to the data?
I think overall this is going to be a report that goes down as the thud that was heard around the world. It's neither a good news or a bad news report. Rather, the data are uniformly mediocre, a lot of plus signs followed by tiny numbers.
All right. So what are some of the takeaways then as we do a deeper dive behind the initial figures?
The labor market and the jobs data in particular had been one of the few economic indicators that had maintained a strong pace of growth as we came into this year. I think what the main takeaway of the May data, or I'm sorry, the April data, is that the pace of jobs growth is decelerating. That is not to say we're going into a recession or that it's turning negative, but we are seeing a slowdown in the extent to which employers are adding to their payrolls. In fact, one of the numbers in this report that's fairly significant is the revision to prior months' jobs gains, which were all in the negative direction.
All right, so who's hiring, who's firing? Any way to tell?
The distribution of the gains was primarily, almost entirely, come to think of it, in the private services sector. The goods-producing sectors, which consist of manufacturing, construction, and the extraction industries, contracted, and that should surprise no one since we've seen the data on new orders for the factories, and we know what's going on in oil and coal. So those declines were unsurprising. What we did see is a bit of a rationalization going on in retailing and in food services, both of which had not really gone through their typical post end of the year seasonal adjustments, and I think we've seen a little bit of a delayed reduction in their hiring. Again, they didn't shed jobs; they just didn't add very many. So overall, it was pretty uniform in the slowdown, but very few components of the economy turned negative, or the jobs market turned negative.
Okay, we're speaking with Pat O'Keefe, Director of Economic Research at Cone Resnick. Think there's a particular stat that is getting too little attention in terms of all this?
A good news number. The hourly earnings of workers rose by 8 cents per hour. That may not sound like a lot, but on an annual basis, that's about a 2.5% increase in worker earnings. Given that workers' earnings make up more than 60% of all of our after-tax incomes, and the household sector makes up 2/3 of demand, that's a positive number. It shows that the household sector will be able to continue to spend like it has been. It will also give the Federal Reserve at least a little bit of confidence that the growth that we've experienced is beginning to spill over into a positive story for both the workers and maybe give a little boost to inflation, which they'd like to see.
So the summer outlook, anything to tell? Any particular indicator we're keeping an eye on?
Hard to see it in these data. There's no indication in the reports that we're getting from the business community in terms of their outlook, no indication that they are anticipating a weak summer, but neither are they talking about ramping up and trying to meet a surge in demand. So for the moment, we're probably best described as being in the dark rather than having any insight to where we're going in the summer months.
So when there's an increase to the hourly wage like that, what is that owed to? Is there a different type of competitiveness out there, for example? Or is it some of these companies moving up their minimum pay rates or what?
I think it's a little bit of both. We've certainly seen some changes in minimum wage laws that may be at play here. But for employers, even though we've got a large number of potential workers out there, within that pool, the number of experienced and qualified workers who might fit a specific demand that the employer has may be limited, and therefore that company has to offer a little bit more money to attract new workers.
Thanks, Pat. Pat O'Keefe, Director of Economic Research at Cohn-Reznick in New Jersey. 19 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Scratching and clawing through a Monday. Glad you're with us. Beyond the headlines now, This Morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it looks like the man who threw an alligator through a drive-through window is now throwing himself on the mercy of the court. The Palm Beach Post reports that 24-year-old Joshua James agreed in court on Friday to plead guilty to unspecified misdemeanor charges. You might remember that James was arrested in February on charges that he threw the 3.5-foot gator into a Wendy's last October. He was charged with several felonies, including assault with a deadly weapon. James told local TV that he is sorry for throwing the gator and said it was a stupid stunt. Thankfully, no one was hurt by the gator, which was captured and returned to the wild. So once again, another gator story.
Yeah.
This is a follow-up to a previous gator story.
So just to be clear, this is frowned upon?
Yeah.
Throwing a gator through a drive-through window.
So apparently he was just driving around and he saw the gator on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And said, you know what? I'm brave enough, number one, to go pick up the gator in the first place. So, and then I'm going to just throw it through a drive-through window.
Throw it through a drive-through window.
Because everyone's going to think that's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I'm in no way going to get in trouble for
that. Right. Okay. Try to understand that thinking.
Yes.
But I'll trust your facts on that story.
And Gordon, when you're really craving a tuna salad sandwich but don't have any mayo in the house or any cash to buy some, sometimes you need to get a little creative. That's exactly what a woman allegedly did when police say she tried to use movie prop money at a store outside of Buffalo, New York. Police say Renee Fox used the counterfeit $100 bill featuring the words "for motion picture use only" to pay for a jar of mayonnaise. The cashier reported noticing that the bill felt a little inauthentic before even noticing the text. Local police and the U.S. Secret Service were notified of the incident, and police say Fox was charged with possession of a forged instrument.
Wow.
I've forgotten about that when you mess with the money, the Secret Service gets involved, so that they kick that up to the highest reaches of the government.
Yes, you get that knock.
Yeah.
We need to talk to you about that money. Yeah. Next time, maybe just go for the peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
You know, scrounge around in the cabinet for what you have on hand instead of trying to go for that mayo you can't afford.
Yeah. And by the way, this person and people like her are the reasons why whenever you use a bill over $20, they have to examine it. First, the cashier. The cashier who just started working yesterday, right, has to examine it. And then they got to use a little marker on it and all that stuff to make sure that it's authentic. Thanks very much.
Well, I think the cashiers oftentimes pretend they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like they're trained just to draw the marker across the bill. And if the customer flees, that's when you call 911. It's not like they've really learned anything about how to.
Is that really going
to
happen? Like someone's going to stand there and they're going to start sweating, and then all of a sudden they're going, "Oh, okay, it's counterfeit. I admit it."
Speaking of which, that's one of my favorite ones. When somebody asks me for a driver's license,
yeah,
you know, I work for the New Jersey Motor Vehicle Commission at one point.
Yes, you did.
So when I hand over the license, I say, "Do you know how to detect a fake license?" And they say no. I said, "Well, what the hell are you looking at my driver's license for?
Right.
What good is it going to do you?"
Right.
So I like playing that one when I'm in a really good mood. It's 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Everyone knows that business is all about numbers. Consider the numbers the state of Michigan can offer your business, like being a top 10 pro-business state, or 2,000, the number of unnecessary regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years, and 6, Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climate, which all adds up to the one state that has all that and more. Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Thanks for being with us. Do you have trouble sleeping? Well, don't automatically reach for the pill bottle. The Associated Press reports on new guidelines which say the first choice to treat chronic insomnia should be CBT. That's cognitive behavioral therapy, a way to condition your body to slumber again. Takes more time and effort than a pill, but doesn't carry the side effects. The hardest step is so-called sleep restriction. Say you average 5.5 hours of sleep a night. Better some nights, worse others. Tack on an extra half hour, then count back the resulting 6 hours from the time you have to wake up. So if the alarm goes off at 6 a.m., then midnight is the prescribed time. You have to strengthen the brain's expectation that the bed is for sleep. So if you can't fall asleep, don't read or watch TV in bed. Get up and go to another room and do that. until you're drowsy and ready to try again. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to Canadian officials are showing some optimism that they're beginning to get on top of the country's most destructive wildfire in recent memory as favorable weather helps firefighters and winds take the flames southeast away from oil sands, boomtown Fort McMurray. Alberta Premier Rachel Notley.
The focus has been protecting, not counting, and so we really can't speculate on damages.
There's no timeline for getting Fort McMurray's 88,000 inhabitants back into what remains of their town or when energy companies would be able to restart operations at evacuated sites nearby. Penn State says its legal settlements with Jerry Sandusky's accusers cover alleged abuse dating to 1971, which was 40 years before his arrest, providing the first confirmation of the time frame of abuse claims that have led to big payouts. The disclosure came yesterday as Penn State President Eric Barron commented on newly revealed allegations that former football coach Joe Paterno was told in 1976 that Sandusky had sexually abused a child and the two assistant coaches witnessed inappropriate contact in the late 80s. Barron calls the accusations unsubstantiated. Twitter has cut off U.S. intelligence agencies from access to a service that sifts through the entire output of its social media postings. The latest example of tension between Silicon Valley and the federal government over terrorism privacy. Today's Wall Street Journal says the service, which sends out alerts of unfolding terror attacks, political unrest, and other potentially important events, isn't directly provided by Twitter, but instead by Dataminer Incorporated, a private company that monitors public Twitter feeds for clients. Britain's Prince Harry and First Lady Michelle Obama helped kick off the Invictus Games for wounded veterans with impassioned speeches last night, joining other figures from the world of sports, entertainment, and politics in a glittery opening ceremony. Here's Prince Harry.
This is a big moment for everyone to say thank you to the guys that put their life on the line. Thank you to the people that serve our country and put themselves in harm's way so we don't have to.
Some 500 wounded former military members from 14 countries will compete in the Paralympic-style sports competition in Florida over 4 days starting today.
Excellent. Good stuff. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning, America's First News. Here's a story about a small business being a good neighbor. An Ohio home that was pelted with eggs more than 100 times over a year will finally get a fresh finish thanks to a local painting company. WEWS-TV reports in Cleveland that Newbert Painting in Brook Park is planning to paint the Euclid home. Euclid is outside of Cleveland on Lake Erie. The work was scheduled to start last Wednesday but was postponed because of the weather. It began Friday when the sun finally came out. Once the home's completed, they'll have a new coat of Sherwin-Williams Festoon Aqua Paint. Newbert Painting had offered to paint the home last summer as part of its Paint It Forward program. The company had been waiting for police approval because the case was under investigation. Meanwhile, a guy named Jason Kozan was charged in March with vandalizing the home between May 2014 and June 2015. He told the TV station he's not responsible. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery, grow your contact list, and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.